brought you this you can keep. This is what I brought, you may forget me. I promise you my heart, just promise to sing. Kiss my eyes and lay me to sleep. Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the interview show. My name is Jerome Cuson. Tonight's guest is Christian Rose. This Saturday night he will be wrestling at Bourbon Street against Merrick Brave in what is being promoted as a non-sanctioned fight. It's going to be a lot of fun. In addition to that, Rhino will be wrestling Eddie Kingston. Also, Carlito will be making his AEW debut, wrestling Keith Walker. In addition to that, AEW is also running on August the 2nd as a special charity show, and that is all at the Berwyn Eagles Club. And Christian Rose will also be a part of that, the AEW debut of Matt Cage, Reed Bentley, Alex Castle, Angelus Lane. They're all going to be there, plus a whole lot more. A lot of the local talent, a lot of the future of AEW will be seen on that show. But for right now, let's get to the interview with Christian Rose. And a very interesting interview, to say the least. He's a very interesting guy. I guess I should do this and get it out of the way, though. If you are listening to us for the first time, you should know that you can find many of our other episodes on our iTunes account and up at pwponderings.com. I am the senior editor of this website, and each of us, Chris, Kevin, and I, are sort of dividing the podcasting duties up. Myself, I'm going to continue to do the interview show. Chris is going to be doing the weekly newscast, and Kevin is going to be introducing what he's doing a little bit later in the week. I don't want to completely spoil it, so I won't. But we also have Kevin Harvey, the School of Everything Else, which you can find on Facebook, and you can find Kevin Harvey at Kevin Harvey AEW, and he has really done some fantastic things already. He hasn't even run an official camp yet, and he has already done some fantastic things. And he has also been very supportive of what we've done and has also brought in some great guests for Pro Wrestling Ponderings and put them on the iTunes account. I mean, we're not officially associated with the podcast, but it is just great to have Kevin Harvey and everything that he's done be affiliated. I cannot put what he's done over enough. He's been a very valuable resource these last few weeks, and if you're a wrestler, then you should absolutely support the School of Everything Else. And if you're not, then you should go to ProWrestlingTees.com and support what he's doing monetarily. You can do that. As far as us, you can support us monetarily by using the High Spots link that you can find in the upper right-hand corner. In the lower right-hand corner is Amazon link. If you click on both of those, if you make purchases through both of those, you will not only be supporting your favorite wrestling company, a fantastic film you just watched, your DVD player book company, you will also be supporting Pro Wrestling Ponderings. So without further ado now, let's get to the Christian Rose interview. Joining me on the line right now, he is going to be a huge part of AEW show coming up this Saturday at Bourbon 115 Bourbon Street. He will be wrestling basically an AEW icon in Merrick Brave. Merrick Brave is a man who is was such a big part of the early history of the promotion, including wrestling a very famous barbed wire match against Tyler Black. And now he is going to be making his first appearance as a wrestler in quite some time, and he is going to be wrestling Christian Rose, and Christian Rose is on the line. And Christian, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. So, you know, sort of your introduction into AEW and you're wrestling someone who has been such a big part of the company's history. And what are your thoughts on sort of how the first few months overall have gone for you?
So far I feel like it's going pretty well for me, really, but I feel like it's been kind of a slow start and kind of a slow introduction. I don't think that people expected to see me there. I definitely don't think that they expected to see Merrick Brave return in an in-ring capacity at all. But, I mean, if you think about it, I've only had two matches so far at AAW, and neither of them, I think, have gone past 5 minutes. So this upcoming event with Spirit Parade that is technically non-sanctioned, I believe is what they're calling it. I feel it's kind of the first chance I have to show what I can actually do, even though it's more of a fight than an actual wrestling match.
So obviously you sort of made your debut at the anniversary show. You had a brawl with Merrick Brave, and you got to talk in front of the live crowd. And the Berwyn faithful have seen a lot in the 9 years that AEW has been running there. So what was your mentality? You know, you're someone that, you know, a lot of the fans probably never seen, maybe they've never even heard of you. So what was your mentality sort of going into that first in-ring promo?
I'd never been there before, but I was already kind of familiar with the AEW crowd, so to speak, just from secondhand experience from talking to the guys that are already on the roster and, like, watching DVDs and downloads of the product and such. But my thing is, everyone talks about how the AEW fans are so intelligent and they're so smart, and they are, but at the same time, that doesn't necessarily make them any better than anybody else who pays for a ticket to see a wrestling show anywhere. And I feel like sometimes there are fans and there are markets where the entire crowd is almost like one person. Like, they almost act as one entity. And AAW is definitely one of those, because they appreciate a good match, but they are just unnecessarily harsh and condescending towards matches that necessarily aren't, you know, five-star classics and barn-burning matches. And I feel like they kind of have this undeserved sense of entitlement, honestly. And so a lot of the stuff that I said about Merrick Brave was really just a way for me to vent on that, you know, mindset that those people have. I mean, and a lot of the stuff that I've said since then, I really mean it with every bit of my, you know, of my being. Because I feel like they do ask for too much, and they do demand too much. And then the moment that someone leaves or moves on, they forget. They abandon them. And I feel like they're going to keep doing it, for that matter.
So do you feel like, as both a wrestler and as sort of a character, do you think it's important to sort of carry with you these actual feelings that you have and to sort of bring that into the ring? Do you feel like it makes you more authentic? Do you feel like it comes across in the way you portray yourself so that the fans will respond to you in a genuine way?
Absolutely, 100%. There's not very many things that I honestly think that I'm good at, but I know that I'm good at talking. And I don't ever have people ask me for advice on how to actually wrestle, but I do have people ask me for advice on how to talk and do promos. And the only thing that I tell them is, if you don't believe what you're saying, nobody else will. So anything that I say on a microphone or in front of a camera or in front of a live crowd, on some level, there's part of that that I do believe. And I do think that that comes through, and I do think that that shows in anything that I say on a microphone. Because, like I said, if I go out there and I say anything and I don't believe it, even partially on some level, people can tell, especially crowds like AAW crowds. They can tell something genuine. They can tell something that's not. You know, they're not by any means stupid at all. And it's easy to see when something is legit and true and when something is just a mask that people put on, you know, figuratively.
I'm not going to ask you to criticize anyone by name, but do you feel like that's sort of what you're trying to bring to the table as far as promos and character and that authenticity? Do you feel like that's something that's missing from the independent scene right now?
I do, because I feel like people try to bring something real to pro wrestling these days. However, they try to bring something real in the sense of what goes on in the ring, in between the bells. Like, for example, anytime that I meet somebody and they ask, oh, well, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I'm a wrestler. And they say, oh, you mean like UFC? I have to explain, no, not like UFC. And then the first thing that they say is, oh, you do that stuff.
Huh.
So people want to see something real. And everyone, if you watch pro wrestling from 10 years ago on an independent level and watch it now, it's not even remotely similar, because mixed martial arts and UFC in particular has changed the way that everyone views a combat-driven show. and everyone now wants to be something real. Everybody wants to drop people on their heads and hit people in the face and kicks and triangle chokes and everything, which is fine. If that's what people want to see, then, you know, on some, you got to give them what they want. But nobody wants to give the people anything real in the sense of, hey, this is who I am. This is what I think. This is what I think. This is what I say. This is what I believe. This is why I do this. And I feel that I'm a man of very strong beliefs, even if they're not popular. So if I can go out there and say, hey, this is what I think about the relationship between wrestlers and fans. This is what I think about what goes on between wrestlers and promoters, or even wrestlers and other wrestlers. And I say what I feel and what I believe is real, then I'm giving something that is just as real as someone getting kicked in the ear at an incredibly high speed.
Steven Jobs, who used to run the Apple Corporation, once was a firm believer in the idea that the audience doesn't know what they want. He believed that Apple sort of had to tell them what they want. Do you sort of feel similarly with your beliefs?
I think maybe sometimes that's true. I wouldn't say necessarily all the time, but I wouldn't say that that's never true. But I do think that sometimes the audience knows what they want. And then when you actually say, this is what you are truly asking for, then they get upset. Because one of the things that I like to think is, universally, nobody likes to say, you're right, I'm wrong. That is just human nature. Nobody wants to ever have to admit that they have made a mistake. And so when wrestling fans feel like they have given a lot to a wrestler, and then you have to say, no, you in fact have not, that makes them legitimately mad. For example, let's say AAW fans, they love watching Zero Gravity. And for that matter, I do too. I think they're insanely talented and just unbelievable tag team. I could watch Zero Gravity matches all day. Now, there's a lot of fans at AAW that would think that because they clap their hands in unison and chant, this is awesome, that they have given something to Zero Gravity. But in reality, can you put gasoline in your car with unified clapping? Can you pay your rent with people chanting, this is awesome? So you can't. So if I say, hey, you and people want to see matches like what Zero Gravity provides, and you feel that this is what entitles you to it, and then point out the fact that you don't actually, you're not giving them nearly what you feel you are, then they have to kind of admit, you know what, he's right. You know, that's the kind of thing that I like to do. Is if this is what you truly want, you have it, and you feel that you're giving enough in return, you're not. You're just lying to yourselves. You're lying to the wrestlers that you claim to support, and you're lying, you know, on a DVD product. You know, I can sit here and show you that you're lying.
So when you talk about the promo that you cut at the most recent news update, when you sort of talked about the Merrick Brave match, and I think a lot of people, not to say they were surprised, but I feel like they were really sold on that match because of the promo that you cut against Merrick Brave and sort of telling him that he needed to kiss his wife and his child and telling him not to show up. And is that sort of coming from a similar place?
Very. Very much so. You even mentioned it in the introduction of this podcast. Merrick Brave is one of the founding fathers of the company. You know, he was one of the guys that in the early days of AEW held it together. And they always talk about him tag teaming with Tyler Black, and they always talk about that barbed wire match. That one match is like very, very, I don't want to say like famous or legendary, but it's incredibly well known. You know, Merrick Brave's entire career is usually related to that and, you know, a failed Shooting Star Press. That's the two things that they remember the most. So why am I the bad guy if I say, you need to not do this? You know, like, keep in mind, by the way, that Merrick Brave was incredibly close to being paralyzed from the neck down because of pro wrestling. It may not have been an AAW, but he was an inch away from being paralyzed. And I ask you, like, did AAW, what did they do to help him? What did the same people do to benefit his cause when he needed them the most? They weren't there. At that point, they'd already moved on to whoever the new guy was, and now they've moved on to the new guy, you know, several times over, and they're going to keep doing it. That's the cycle. It's almost like, it's kind of like getting led down a chute to a slaughterhouse. You know, they're going to look at a guy like ACH. You know, he came into AAW as a newcomer and a relative unknown, and the people took to him, and they absolutely do love him, and he's incredibly talented. But what is going to happen to him as it pertains to his relationship with those fans in the next 6-8 months, maybe even a year? You know, what's going to happen to Michael Elgin? What's going to happen to Shane Hollister? You know, he's been there forever, and they're just going to keep doing this. You know, it's a vicious, vicious cycle, and I absolutely do think that, like, that's part of my problem with the Merrick Brave thing is that he doesn't want to admit that I'm right.
So, in addition to being such a big part of with the promos, you know, you had a chance to wrestle Davey Vega back in April, and it was your debut, and, you know, it really wasn't that long of a match, but I think Davey Vega is one of those guys sort of on the underrated side, and I know that, you know, it wasn't a long match, but what were your thoughts on sort of getting a chance to wrestle someone like him?
I didn't know I was wrestling Davey Vega until I got there, and then I was incredibly happy to do so. That was a first-time-ever match for me. I do agree. I do think that he's very, very underrated. I know that he's worked a lot of places consistently for, like, several years now, and most notably for St. Louis Anarchy. But he's very, very talented guy, very, very good. I wish that the match had I actually do kind of wish that the match had gone on longer. And I think that, like, if people had known that that match was going to be on the show, they would have been very surprised that it was as brief as it was. But, no, I agree. Very, like, underrated guy. I was glad to get, like, a good, talented wrestler for my actual first match, not just some guy.
And, obviously, you've also had a chance to wrestle Tony Riekin in an AEW ring as well. And any brief thoughts on that match? Obviously, again, we talked about it earlier, another match that didn't necessarily get, you know, a great deal of time, but sort of getting a chance for you to establish yourself.
Kind of different, well, not kind of, a very different match than it was with Davey Vega. I think these guys are at different spectrums in their wrestling careers right now. I know Regan's an older guy. He's got a family he likes to take care of and stuff like that, which is perfectly respectable. Honestly, man, it was somebody on Twitter that night even, like, said it. They're like, this is a complete mismatch. And I it's not that I, you know, don't like the guy or anything. And the match itself was fine, but it was pretty one-sided, I feel.
And what makes you interested in coming to AEW and to sort of establish yourself in this company?
I'm sorry, what makes me interested?
Yeah, why are you interested in sort of coming into AEW and sort of establishing yourself here?
Well, right now, if you look at indies, especially in the Midwest, that's one of the places to be. There's a handful of promotions that are becoming, as I call it, the hotness. And AAW has been on a roll for quite some time now. They've, you know, kind of made themselves into this whole different animal in the Midwest as far as the scene. They have a very rabid fan base. Like, I will say a lot of bad things about those people, but I will also say that they are fiercely dedicated to the idea of AAW, just maybe not so much the guys. And they have good production value. They have good exposure. Look at the guys that have gone through AAW and moved on to bigger and, you know, more mainstream places. You know, we mentioned Tyler Black earlier. He's currently having an amazing career, and AAW was the place where he really, you know, kind of cut his teeth and became something. So I think it's a great place to go. It's definitely a step up from a lot of places that I've been. Actually, a step up from almost every place that I've been. And it's just a good way to get your name out there and to make people know who you are and what you can do.
And I would think that one of the places that most people have to get into AEW is Dreamway. And kind of want to talk about how that opportunity came out. How did you get into Dreamwave Wrestling?
Dreamwave completely fell into my lap. What's funny is I had had a match in Springfield against Mason Beck a couple of years ago, and I knew that he was a guy in Dreamwave, and so afterwards I asked him what do I got to do to get the Dream Rave? And he basically said, you know, you're a good wrestler, but they like characters, and they want characters. And at the time, I was just being me, which I didn't feel was a character. It was just, I was just a guy. And so I spent about 2 months, maybe a month and a half, just with a notebook. And anytime I had a spare moment, I was coming up with ideas for characters. And let me tell you, I had some really bad ideas, but and I'm glad that I didn't act on any of them. But I knew I really wanted to be there. And at the time, AAW was having great technical wrestling, fast paced, very athletic matches. And I was like, well, I physically can't do that type of match. I'm not that fast. I'm not that strong or whatever. And I hadn't really found myself. So I was like, well, Dreamwave is a much more obtainable goal. And then I tried so hard to come up with something that I felt like I could do. And like I said earlier, if you don't believe it, the people won't believe it either. And I just kept drawing blanks. I couldn't come up with anything that I thought would work for me. So basically, I put the idea out of my head. And I was kind of kicking around, just doing shows, and one day out of absolute nowhere, in fact, I'm not even sure how he got my number, but Jay Repsol sent me a text, said, you know, this is Jay Repsol, I run Dreamwave Wrestling, would you like to come work for us? And I said, absolutely. So it really just kind of fell into my lap, and I was like, well, what exactly was it that you would like for me to do? Because some of the guys have gone to Dreamwave and kind of been overhauled, so to speak. Waylon Beck being, I think, one of the better examples. And so, again, I was worried, well, you know, maybe he's going to want me to do something that I can't, you know, do genuinely. And instead, I was told, you know, I want you to be basically, I think the way that it was worded to me was, I want you to be emo, but still be a badass and not be a pussy. And I said, okay, well, that's kind of up my alley, I guess. And, that was how I got started. So, yeah, he just, I think he just stumbled across some random YouTube video of me or something, and I just got plucked out of the sky and given an opportunity to do what I was already doing, and then that was that.
I mean, it seems like based on everything that I've been told and in reading some of the reports and the results, you know, your character really hasn't changed, but fans are responding to you in a more positive way. Why do you think that's the case?
If I could tell you, I would. I honestly don't know. I can pinpoint about the time that it started to happen, and it was very strange. I think that a big part of it is the undefeated streak in Dreamwave. I think that, you know, what's funny is, like, I was just talking about this recently, because it seems like 9 or 10 months ago, the people that were coming to shows and they were like, he's going to lose. I know that lanky bastard is going to lose, are now the people that are in the crowd going, don't lose, don't lose. I honestly, I don't know, but I remember it was about last November, they announced the match with me and Matt Hardy, and a lot of the people cheered. And I remember thinking, like, okay, well, they're cheering because they think I'm going to lose. And then during the match, the crowd split. Like, at first they were completely for him, but during the match they kind of split, and there was a dueling chant of let's go, or it was let's go Hardy, Christian, or, you know, back and forth. I remember thinking, well, that's kind of strange. And then afterwards, I won, and then Matt took the mic and said some, you know, very complimentary things, and I very briefly shook his hand and then left. And I think that that was the moment they were like, oh, okay. And since then, it's just been like, you know, it was kind of back and forth, kind of back and forth, and now, for reasons that I cannot explain, the crowd enjoys what I do. I think that part of it is because of the stuff on the shows with JT Castilli. I think that there's always the idea of, oh, this guy's going against an authority figure. Nobody likes authority figures, so we're going to side with the guy going against them, and maybe that's what it is. I feel like I'm different than most of the roster at Dreamwave, and maybe that's what it is. Sometimes people just latch on to things that are different. But at the end of the day, if you just said, hey, why do the fans of Dreamwave like you? I honestly can't tell you, like, just an absolute answer, because I don't know. I'm not even a very likable person, so I have no idea.
Do you feel like it's them wanting to cheer for an anti-hero? Because that's pretty popular on the television these days.
It is. I think that that's part of it. I also think that like, I always try to compare wrestling to movies. And I feel like if you go back and watch movies in the last, I mean, it's not necessarily a very recent trend, but if you go back and watch movies from the past several decades versus, like, classic cinema, the lines between good guy and bad guy and, you know, villain and hero have really become blurred. And people do kind of want an anti-hero more than they want a hero, and I think it's because that's more relatable to people. I think that people these days are aware that they as a person are not necessarily good. They may be flawed, they may not be bad, but they're not just sheer good. And when I say, like, the idea of, like, comparing wrestling to movies, look at The Dark Knight. Because the most popular character in The Dark Knight was the Joker. You know, Batman was pretty much just the straight guy for him. And it's like, if you watch that movie, the Joker is a horrible person. He's blowing up hospitals and doing all these terrible things just for his own amusement. And that was all people wanted to talk about. You know, nobody watched that movie and said, man, Batman is so cool. You know, and I think that the anti-hero thing appeals to people. I think that, like, just the line has become so blurred these days. Like, there's not even so much black and white as much as it is just different shades of gray. But my thing is, I honestly, if people cheer, they cheer. If people boo, they boo. As long as they're making noise, I know that they're watching what I'm doing.
And specifically, I want to talk about a couple of big opportunities that have come through Dreamwave. These are probably the two matches that people are going to ask you about these for the rest of your career. So you might as well come up with your stock answer for what your thoughts are wrestling against someone like Matt Hardy.
The Matt Hardy match, I maintain, is one of my best matches, at least, definitely one of my three best matches. I learned so much just in that one day of talking to him beforehand, talking to him afterhand, during the match, even just a bunch of little things. He's very, very smart, and he's a guy that is, he works so hard. He's not, I know that there's a lot of times where people say, oh, this guy that used to wrestle in the WWE was on this indie show and, you know, he did two moves and then went home, and that's not him at all. I had a few ideas, he had more. And he had actually done research on me. Like, he had watched stuff on YouTube. He had, you know, seen footage of matches. And he's like, okay, you know, I know that this is, you know, what you bring to the table. This is what I would like to do. And if anybody gets the chance to work with him, they absolutely need to take it, because he is a different level of smart. I learned a lot from that match, and I feel that that match is different from most of the ones that I had, because it's much more, what's the word I want to look? It's much more of a mainstream style, so to speak. But it was good. I really enjoyed it. Definitely one of my three best. And did you say, what was the other one you wanted to ask about?
I was going to, of course, ask about John Morrison, but I had a follow-up on Matt Hardy.
Please go on.
And I was going to ask, do you feel like that your style perhaps complements him better than wrestling someone on the independent scene who is maybe more into the MMA style, the head dropping and all the moves and that kind of thing?
I think so. I think that me and him mesh pretty well in ring, as far as like in ring style and stuff. Also, like, I'm not trying to, like, you know, completely tear apart. Like, I can't wrestle, you know, like it doesn't happen that often, but I know a couple of moves.
When you wrestle.
Say what?
You hate your matches.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I'm capable of you know, doing things in ring. I think that style of wrestling that's not necessarily just throwing each other around with Greco-Roman throws and such, I think that me and Hardy kind of do complement each other on that. I would love the opportunity to work with him again. Like, that was just absolutely a great experience. I'm so happy I got the chance to do it. I think that more people kind of need to learn from guys like that. They're not lazy by any means, and they work hard, but it's just different.
And probably smarter.
Yeah, definitely.
And of course, the other match, I guess, maybe a little bit different, wrestling someone like John Morrison, who very similar to Matt Hardy, sort of been on that stage, but very different type of match.
Very, very different. Morrison is, and odds are people that have wrestled me are going to hear this, but this is not a fight against him. Morrison is by a wide margin the best athlete that I have been in the ring with. He is just smooth and fluid in the ring. He's very strong. His sense of timing is very good. And for that, like, I mean, Matt Hardy still, even at this age, is a great athlete. But Morrison is just a sheer machine physically. He's an awesome dude. He's very, very laid back. I think the phrase that I heard to describe him was California cool. And that was very much it. He's definitely open for ideas, definitely open to work hard in the ring. I remember talking to him beforehand. He said something about, well, how do you feel? I said, I have about 8,000 ideas. And he said, well, let's do all of them. He's a very, very cool guy. Very helpful, very supportive. I've talked to him a handful of times since then. Him and Hardy both, for that matter. And they're both just very positive people, which is different from me. And the Morrison match, I feel, was definitely flashier. It was more aesthetically pleasing and much more maybe action-packed. So I don't like to people ask me to compare the two, and to me, you can't really compare them just straight across because it was just a different contest each time. It's kind of like comparing two movies that I like. It's kind of like comparing Jaws to Shawshank Redemption. I thoroughly enjoyed both movies, but they're just not even comparable to me because they're completely different types of film.
But based on the way that you've been just talking, it sounds like the Matt Hardy match is probably the type of match that you would like to have more so in your career.
there was nothing absolutely wrong with the Morrison match at all. Like, I still really, really liked it, and it was definitely different from what I had done, but I think I do like the Matt Hardy match a little bit better personally, just because there was more emotion involved in it. Not that, you know, the Morrison match didn't have that by any means. I mean, it did, but I feel like the Matt Hardy match, that and the crowd was just completely different. You know, like, to hear them split midway through the Matt Hardy match was something. When the Morrison match started, they were already split. They didn't actually break, but...
What would you say is, like, the difference between a Dreamwave crowd and an AEW crowd?
Dreamwave crowds are... Okay, to me, they're more laid back. I think that's the way I'd like to put it. They're there to basically... They want to just watch the show. They very much like characters. They are... I feel like they want more of a variety in wrestling, and the AEW crowd, what they want is they want wrestling. They want very intense, very fast-paced, high-impact, you know, even, you know, a lot of times violent stuff. And that's what AEW gives them. You know, and if you watch the Dreamwave show and you watch an AEW show back-to-back, it's night and day to me. And I think that both are good on their own merit, but there's just tremendous differences in them. I feel like, you know, Dreamwave is much more of a, I guess, much more of a family show. You know, they don't push the envelope so much with some of the things that AEW does. And for that matter, AEW doesn't do a lot of things that Dreamwave does. Dreamwave has a lot more segments that are not just matches. AEW is a place where if you can't go in ring, you're not going to last. And Dreamwave is a place where you can go in ring, you know, and do all the stuff that you want to do technically. But if you can't have a good character that actually really connects with the crowd on that level, then, you know, you're not going to last there. I get asked, because, like, I'm the hotness at Dreamwave, I get asked by guys all the time how to get there, and it's really frustrating when I say this is what they want, and then they go and they do a tryout match, and they don't do any of the things that I tell them to do, and then they don't get put on a show, and they don't get called back. And then they're like, well, I don't understand why that happened. I'm like, you're not doing what you want, you know, you're not giving them what they want. It's kind of like you can't go to a job interview and know what the qualifications are for the job and then just say, no, I can't have any of those or I don't have any of those qualifications, and then get upset when you don't get hired. But I mean, does that make sense, though, that they both give you wrestling, they just give you a different side of wrestling by and large?
I mean, if I were writing a cover letter for a specific company, I would do research on it, and I would look for the keywords and put those in my cover letter, and I would look for what is it that this company wants out of its workers, and what are they looking for. So I think it makes a lot of sense in that, you know, you're still a wrestler, but each company has its way of doing things, different styles, and it's not necessarily bad, but it's just different. And, you know, I can only see wrestling in both Dreamwave and AEW as being a beneficial, because it's wrestling in front of two different audiences and you're wrestling two different styles, and you probably have two very different characters.
I feel like I'm definitely more aggressive on the mic at AEW than I am at Dreamwave, than I was. And it's nice to wrestle in both places because they both demand different things, and they both want different things, and they both ask different things. So it kind of helps you be more well-rounded.
And obviously a big part of your Dreamwave career is wrestling Prince Mustafa Ali. You did that at the last show, and you're going to be doing that again on August the 3rd in LaSalle, Illinois. And why don't you talk about getting to wrestle someone who is another guy, I mean, feels very similar in that he's underrated, and, you know, he's gotten some rave reviews for things that he's done in other places, Dreamwave included. So talk about getting a chance to wrestle someone like him.
The thing with Ali is, and I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but it's pretty obvious if you followed us on Twitter. Ali is one of my very best friends. He's someone that I have, like, called and talked to, just not even about wrestling, just about stuff like in life that, you know, has me upset or down or whatever. Me and him are, and we've talked about it a bunch of times, we are very, very different people, but we are eerily similar. We have very similar views on society and people in general and things. And so we also have very similar views on wrestling. And so getting the opportunity, that last match was the first time ever that I'd been in the ring with him. And getting the opportunity to do that was something where it was kind of stressful, and it was violent. It was something. People are still messaging me about it. But he's one of those guys that I feel like sometimes there's people that are made to wrestle each other because they're at opposite ends of the spectrum, and then there's people that are made to wrestle each other because they are right beside each other on the spectrum. And I feel like that's kind of me and him on several different fronts, because he is 100 times the athlete that I am. He can do things that just so many people can't do. But at the same time, I can do things that he can't do. And then we have things that we can both do. You know, we both complement each other very, very well in and out of the ring. We both have things that we bring to the table that I feel like we cover each other's weaknesses and we amplify each other's strengths. And that match on the 3rd, I'm looking forward to. It's going to be different than the last one for sure. But Prince Mustafa Ali is one of those guys that I would wrestle every week if I could. Like, if I had the chance to do that, that would be completely fine.
For sure, for sure. And I guess I also want to ask about, you know, you sort of have your traveling circus of people yourself. Sometimes, you know, Matt Cage and Alex Castle, Angelus Lane, Reed Bentley. You guys are always traveling around, going to shows together. And what's it like to sort of have that supportive network around you, for better or for worse sometimes? I'm sure you guys don't always get along and there's fights, but what's it like to have that supportive network around you when you're going to these various places?
I don't know how people do it without that. Like, I know that this is like the typical stereotype or stereotypical answer, I'm sorry. But, like, I don't have the best of a relationship with my family, and so I have to have, you know, my friends for support and everything, and having, you know, the crew that is not just there to, like, help and support and everything, but to ride with and to travel with and, you know, talk to about, you know, stuff on the road, talk to you about matches, talk to you about everything wrestling involved is very important. Matt Cage is a guy that has done a lot for me in wrestling and whatnot. He's helped me get into shape. He's helped me get a bunch of bookings. He's helped me get a lot of exposure. He's made me a better wrestler. I really enjoy working with him, whether I'm teaming with him or not. Alex Castle has been my best friend for over a decade, and we have the most bizarre friendship ever because we're best friends, but we hate each other. Like I don't think either of us has said anything complimentary about the other one in the 10 years that we've known each other. Let me think. Reed Bentley is one of my absolute favorite people. And also, hey, that's a guy that's criminally underrated. He's a guy that I feel like is going to blow up places, especially right now. Like, he's getting good opportunities in Mid-South. He's getting a good opportunity in Dreamwave. I really wish more promotions would get on the Reed Bentley bandwagon. Even Angelus Lane is somebody that, like, I don't get along with often. But, you know, it's nice just to have people in that crew. And, like, I feel, even when, like, you go, and it's not just her, by the way, because there's times where I've wanted to just skin all three of those guys alive. But I feel like you kind of have to have that sometimes. You have to have people that are making you do things even if you don't necessarily want to do them. You know, there's been times where, like, I'm just laying in bed and I don't want to get up, and Cage is, you know, yelling at me, come on, we're going to the gym. You know, there's times where Castle is kind of feeling down about wrestling and everything, and we have to, like, tell him, hey, man, keep your chin up. You know, you're doing fine. You know, you just got to do this right. And there's times with, you know, Reed Bentley where I kind of, I don't know, don't even know what his life is, but you just kind of have to, like, we all just kind of watch out for each other on some level. And, you know, there's times where me and Angelus Lane do each other a favor by not being around each other. But it's like, there's a lot of guys that don't have that kind of a crew. And actually, for that matter, there's a lot of guys who do have a crew like that. You know, there's always going to be packs of people in wrestling, and how the people do it without that is just absolutely, I just can't understand. It is beyond me. And I mean, I will say, and again, like, anybody who follows us on Twitter, you can tell, like, sometimes the car rides wear pretty thin.
that comes across. And if you follow all of these people on Twitter, your weekends can be way more entertaining just by following all of them.
Yeah. And I mean, traveling with people, I learned a long time ago, like, one of the few things that I think I learned from my mom was, she said the best way to make best friends hate each other is to make them live together. And I think she's wrong, actually. That may work, but I think the best way to make friends hate each other is to put them in a car for 8 to 10, 12 hours and see what happens. Especially a car when the air conditioning is going in and out or something like that. Yeah.
Southern Illinois can get pretty hot, everybody. So I can only imagine those car rides must get pretty lethal.
There's not much that tests somebody's patience more than something like that. Especially, man, depending on who's driving is even a big thing. Because, like, I love Alex Castle to death, but he is possibly the worst person in the world to travel with. Absolutely the worst. He will not stop to eat somewhere unless that is where he wants to eat. He will make absolutely no concessions on that. If you have to go to the bathroom, that doesn't matter, because he doesn't have to go to the bathroom. If you don't have leg room and you're sitting behind him, tough, because his driver's seat in his car has never moved. And for that matter, like, I know that sometimes I'm not easy to travel with. I just don't know what it is, because I think I'm awesome. But, you know, Matt Cage falls asleep as soon as he sits in the car. It doesn't matter how tired or awake he is. He just collapses, and sometimes you need someone to talk to, and he just nods off. It is more likely to pull a camel through the eye of a needle than it is to get Angelus Lane out of a bed in a timely fashion. Let me think. Reed Bentley is actually super easy to travel with. Like, I really wanted to keep that going.
Because I was going to – Kevin Ford asked, who is the more intolerable partner to travel with? And I think we have our answer.
Yeah, basically. Like, Kappa was by a wide margin the worst person to travel with, especially if you enjoy the things that he enjoys, I'm sure it's great. But if you have any form of differing opinion, nah, man, nah. You have to like the music that he likes. You have to like the food that he likes. Like, there's been so many times, too, where, like, Castle does not allow anybody to drive his car except for him. I've known the guy for 10 years, and only once have I driven his car. So if he gets tired, well, either the mood in the car just changes, or you have to stop somewhere. And it's like, hey, man, why don't you just let me drive, and you can sleep for a little while? No. You know, that's it. There's not even an argument or a discussion. It's just, no, we're not doing that. But
despite all of this, you would say that despite all the pains in the asses that you feel these people are, you still feel like it's important to have these people around, and they've made you a better wrestler.
Absolutely. Like, without question.
So I want to ask about a match that you had at Wrestling is Intense, because I had a chance to see Buck Boulder's very first match at the Class Wars show back in October. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, this was just his third match when he wrestled you in the main event of Wrestling is Intense. And I'm just wondering, you know, I know you're not a super veteran, but just to wrestle someone who's wrestling in their third match, what sort of a mentality do you have in order to be able to put something together, you know, that's going to sort of be entertaining for the fans, but also sort of serve your needs and maybe help Buck Boulder grow as a wrestler?
I subscribe in such instances to the rule of KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. Also, for the record, I didn't know that was only his third match until afterwards. So I just thought he was, like, nervous, which I thought was strange. But anyways, I like Buck. I feel like he did okay. That match should not have been the main event, though. And I didn't, like, the match itself was fine. I had no real issue with it. I don't think I've got to watch it back, though. I don't recall. But just something like that is, it's one of those things where you have to, I'm not a super veteran. I'm not even a veteran. I'm not even super. But I can remember, you know, I feel like everyone needs to remember where they came from and where you were when you started out, because not everyone is just a natural. And, I mean, I feel like stuff like that, if a guy says, hey, I'm still new, you know, keep it simple, help me and everything, that's great, because that's what just what you do. You help them, because if that guy gets better, we all get better. You know, like, we're all in this to help each other, and we're all in this to help pro wrestling as a whole. And so the match with Buck, we were putting it together, and I feel like there were things about it that, like, as the match was coming together, I was like, okay, well, obviously he's new and hasn't had very many matches. And so I asked somebody, and they said that, like, his last match was at that School of Heart show. And I was like, man, that was months ago. But I still didn't realize how few matches he had had. Basically, there's things that I ask for from people in matches, and he was able to, I think at least, give me what I wanted, because it's kind of like, okay, well, he doesn't have the deepest repertoire of offense or anything like that. But I feel like he did well overall, especially, I mean, if you grade it on a curve, I feel like he did well, because I know my third match was way worse than that. I don't even remember what it was, but I guarantee you it was terrible.
Hopefully never to be seen by a wrestling
fan. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is. I'm certain it was in front of four people that were drunk at a bar and nobody filmed anything. But I think that, and, like, I think that sometimes people need to just be able to say, hey, can we simplify this? You know, can you, you know, there's no shame in asking for help, you know. I would rather somebody say, hey, I'm new at this, than just say, just smile and nod, and then the match is a disaster. And then you find out later on that they had no idea what you were talking about.
So as we wrap things up here, I guess I want to know sort of, what are your goals in wrestling? I mean, obviously you've had the opportunity to wrestle guys like Matt Hardy and John Morrison. You know, you're sort of just getting into AEW, but where do you sort of see yourself in the next couple of years?
I don't know. celebrating the 5-year anniversary of that question. my goals in wrestling, I want to make money from wrestling. I want to travel. If I can get to the point where I am sustaining my life completely off of wrestling, I will be happy, because that's the only thing that I want to do. And I feel like anybody that has any form of passion in their life, if they can make their passion into their job, that to me is happiness. If you can do what you love to do more than anything else and earn a living doing it, to me, you are the salt of the earth, because not very many people are able to do that or willing to try or anything like that. I mean, I talk to people all the time and they ask me, like, why do I do it? And okay, let's say I'm talking to a guy and his big thing is he likes to go hunting. I'm like, if you got paid money to go hunting, would you do it? He's like, well, yeah. I'm like, that's what I want. You know, I want to provide for myself. Like, I have no desire to have a family, none whatsoever. So, I want to provide for myself through wrestling. I want to travel. I want to see as much of the world as I can. And I mean, I've got to see a lot of the Midwest, which is fine. It's great. I'm glad that I've got to do that. But there's a lot of places I've gone to just because of wrestling. There's so many places I've gone to that I would have at no point ever seen in my life if it wasn't for wrestling. Because, like, not, I guess I'm knocking the place, but why would I go to South Dakota? Like, what is there for me if it's not wrestling? And I mean, I want to travel. I want to go over the country. For that matter, I want to go internationally. I want to travel overseas. I want to see as much of the world as I can, and I want to see it through wrestling. And I want to make money. As long as I'm doing that and I'm healthy-ish, I'm fine with it. If I get to go to the big leagues, that would be great, obviously, because that's the best way to make the most money and to see the most of the world. But as long as I'm making some upwards movement and people enjoy what I do and I'm meeting those goals, I'm content.
Christian, I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to do this. It's been a great almost 50 minutes here talking about AEW Dreamwave, your match with Buck Boulder, some of your goals. But before we get out of here, of course, we let all of our guests plug their stuff. Upcoming dates that you want to promote, where can we find you on the various social media platforms? The floor is now yours.
Let me think. This coming Saturday is AAW at Bourbon Street. The weekend after, I'll be on the AAW August 2nd show. I think that's in Berlin. And then on the 3rd, I will be back in LaSalle for Dreamwave Wrestling in this Lumberjack match against Prince Mustafa Ali, wherein we will do dangerous things to each other. Social media. I have a Facebook, but I don't honestly use it that much. I get so many friend requests on there, and if I don't know who the person is just from looking at their profile and it's not some hot chick, I don't accept it. Let me think. I just use the Twitter thing. I know there's umpteen million social networking sites now, but I just use Twitter mainly. That is at Bitter Lunatic. Feel free to tweet at me. Feel free to say whatever you'd like to say. I try to respond to most tweets that I get. There's not a lot of them that I just flat out ignore unless I'm asleep or doing something. Which, sleeping thing, that's not often, but just at Bitter Lunatic. If you, for whatever reason, wanted to communicate via the old-fashioned email for, like, booking information or whatnot, you can email me at bitterlunatic84@gmail.com. That'll go straight to my phone, which is always good. And, I think that's about it. I think that's all I got.
All right, so good luck on Saturday. Try not to kill yourself against Merrick Brave, and try not to kill him. And thanks for doing this.
Well, that last part I can't promise, but I'll be fine.
All right, thanks again. Have yourself a good night.
Thank you. You too.